Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, Wisconsin lawmakers respond to the slaying of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. Plus, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley launches his campaign to be governor. And Democrats and Republicans unveil dueling education legislation. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for September 12th.
I'm Ani Van Wagtendonk.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Welcome to Rewind. Pretty heavy week this week, obviously. And so we're going to start with kind of the big news, which is the assassination of Charlie Kirk. He was a figure who was pretty divisive in life, but in his death, there has been pretty universal condemnation from Wisconsin leaders over this assassination. So Tony Evers and many other leaders saying political violence is wrong. We saw quite a bit of speech about this on the floor of the assembly yesterday. So let's start with a little bit of video of leaders responding to this.
Political violence and violence is never the answer. Whether it's the arson attack on Governor Josh Shapiro's home, the attempt on President Trump's life, or the state and university and college shootings that are happening all across our nation, violence is never the answer. We stand together to condemn this violence wherever it happens, and we promise and pledge we will work with anyone to stop this from happening again.
We would say that no matter who is assassinated, on the far right, the far left, man, woman, rich, poor, gay, straight, doesn't matter, assassination is 100% of the time wrong. It's what I thought when Melissa Hortman, who was clearly a liberal Democrat, I didn't hear anybody on the right celebrating the fact that she was assassinated. It was awful. And that's the way it should be. So what frustrates me is a small number, I don't want to exaggerate it, but there is a small number who are celebrating what happened yesterday and saying that he deserved it. No person deserves to be assassinated, no matter who they are.
Right. So again, this sort of universal condemnation of political violence. But there's been a little bit of a range of kind of the heat behind some of the responses. And so particularly I noticed, you know, from Representative Derek Van Orden, less of that kind of emotional response and more of a actually very angry response of kind of this idea that we're at civil war.
So like the last 2 days, I've seen him tweet the gloves are off, talk about a civil war. The left is about to get a right that he's did an interview in D.C. where he said all the reporters in there are responsible for Kirk's death. He has talked about cutting funding to any public entity that employs somebody who celebrated Kirk's death, and I'm not going to defend anybody who said anything positive about somebody being killed, but he's going on this kind of like, I don't know if that's an outlet for him to express himself about this. It's an interesting kind of tact because if you look at social media, which we have to be on in our jobs, there's a range of reactions, right? You have on the one side the people who are saying this is all bad. Then you have like these kind of like liberals who are saying, yeah, it's bad, but he said all these things. Then you have some liberals who are saying, I'm happy that he's dead for whatever reason. Then you have these conservatives who are saying, this has opened our eyes. We are now basically at war. Like they silenced somebody who was not being violent, who was going to debate people. Now we're going to push back. And then voices like Van Orden is kind of really focusing on that we are at war for the soul of America, essentially. So my question is, what's this going to mean? We are seeing lawmakers nationally already talk about doing fewer events outside, canceling events, looking at security. We had the deaths of a Minnesota lawmaker just this summer. Another one tried to be assassinated there, shot somebody else. It's getting ugly out there. And the Utah governor, I thought it was very interesting today, said social media is part of the problem and that people need to turn off social media, get outside and touch some grass. So you're kind of hoping that maybe things tone down, but I'm not going to lie. I've had conversations with friends this week where I've noted that I've been at rallies for President Trump and felt like you can see the tension, you know, looking in the press pen of like, they don't just not like us, they want to, I think, hurt us. So what's that going to lead to eventually? Is there going to be something else? Don't forget, with Minnesota, their Wisconsin lawmakers are on the hit list, allegedly, that this guy had. So it's just kind of a scary situation. And the conversation I've seen having lots of people having is, what's going to make it better? What's going to change this?
One of the differences with Minnesota was that those lawmakers were targeted in their homes. And so the conversation after that was, you know, do we need to ramp up security at the Capitol or in public places? And the response at the time here in Wisconsin was, we have this beautifully accessible Capitol building and we don't necessarily want to kind of violate the history and traditions of that. But now this was not a person, as you say, who was in his home or targeted. He was targeted in a very public place while surrounded by people. One of the other pieces of this that's really kind of stood out to me, and I think people are really kind of contemplating, is the fact that there were so many cell phones out. To your point about social media, the video of this event spread so quickly. I did not want to watch that video. I really did not think it would behoove my, you know, professional needs to watch it. I saw it anyways. Thinking about, you know, the access that young people who are scrolling on their phones have to just these images of violence, I think that's another piece of this kind of political violence conversation. And I'll be curious to see if this, you know, instigates any type of legislative response, either around, again, sort of the social, like, trying to regulate the social media sharing of these images of violence, or again, just how it will respond to kind of the increased temperature around these conversations. So anyways, it's just a terrible week. It was a terrible thing to see. And it's been, I think, inspiring at least to see leaders from both parties universally condemn it again. So moving on to sort of more normal business, we have Governor Evers has sued the legislature over this ongoing fight over administrative rules. So this was first reported by the Wisconsin State Journal, and then he sent out a release about it earlier today. And so again, we have a little bit of alphabet soup here, but essentially he is suing over who gets to make the rules. This was filed Tuesday in Dane County. He accuses the Legislative Reference Bureau Director Rick Champagne, Speaker Robin Voss, and Senate President Mary Felskowski of refusing to publish agency rules. He says that the Legislative Reference Bureau is deferring to JCLO, the Legislature's Organization Committee, and saying that they are refusing to publish rules submitted. So this comes after this lawsuit that we've been talking about basically all summer about who has the authority to publish and implement these rules. What do you make of this lawsuit?
Well, I'd claim that I had some great insight when I predicted there would be a lawsuit like this, but we all knew this was coming. So here's kind of the breakdown of what's happening here. So the state Supreme Court ruled that the Joint Committee for Review of Administrative Rules cannot indefinitely suspend rules anymore. So that's clearly gone. There is still a process where standing committees, the Committee on Public Safety and Justice, the Judiciary, these standing committees in each house can review administrative rules. They have 30 days to do it, can extend it by another 30 days for a total of 60. This lawsuit is saying, now that you've invalidated the JCRAR process, the indefinite suspension process, the only avenue left is for the legislature to pass a bill to stop a rule. Short of that, once the governor's gone through this process, which does take months, you have to call it a scope statement where you outline basically the foundation of this rule, what it's going to be, it's reviewed, it's approved, it takes months. Once we've begun this process, once we clear those hurdles, you must publish the rule. You can only stop it through a law, basically a law. What I'm fascinated to watch is, how is this going to play out? Is the court going to say, yes, you are right, now you can just pass a rule, period. There's no more oversight unless you can pass a bill. And now, let's be honest, passing a bill to stop a rule, that's not going to happen. The governor has to sign the bill. So a couple other things to watch. One, this week, Robin Voss, the Assembly Speaker, announced a series of task forces that are going to meet this fall and propose things. One's going to be on the administrative rules process. He wants that committee to propose a constitutional amendment to negate the Supreme Court ruling. Now, that takes back-to-back sessions. So best case scenario, if you're a Republican lawmaker right now, you pass that constitutional amendment this session, you have to have both houses of legislature next session and pass it again before it go to voters. So that's a ways away. And the thing you keep hearing from Republicans is, hey, Democrats, you're in charge now. You're happy that Governor Evers is doing this, but someday there'll be a Republican governor again, and he or she will exercise the same authority you're okay with now in ways you don't like. So it's going to be fascinating to watch this court system play out, and Republicans are risking again, without their facing again, the opportunity for the courts to put in place and you know, precedent saying you don't have this power anymore. So it's a little risk for them.
Well, and also we've heard Republicans say that they might try to float a constitutional amendment that would essentially rewrite and permanently define how this process works. That's also not a slow process. Mm-hmm. A constitutional amendment needs to pass both chambers of the legislature twice in a row and then go before voters. This is also the kind of issue that, even though we talk about it basically every single week, I don't know how many voters like turn out to the polls because they're really excited to change the Constitution in regards to the rules-making process. And so no matter what, it's going to be, I think, a long journey to kind of resolve some of this. And as we always say, this one will probably end up at the Supreme Court.
Great example of how it's playing out. You guys had a story this week about these huge increases in fees for basically ag producers, you know, farmers. I think 1,700% you guys reported one of the fees is going up. And so before, so the Department of Ag, Trade, Consumer Protection would propose this rule and then it'd go through this process and be reviewed. Now they're saying we don't have to really worry about you guys because you can't stop us. So there's not really legislative oversight or a way to stop it other than passing a bill to say, no, you can't raise fees by that much on these producers.
And, you know, again, another thing about these rules is just like how in the background of political life they typically are. And so now that we're seeing them get kind of held up in these ways, it becomes clear, again, how kind of affecting of our life they really are. So we will continue to kind of watch that playing out. Getting to what I thought was actually going to be the lead story earlier in the week, David Crowley, Milwaukee County executive, has launched his bid for governor. He released a video on Tuesday where he kind of made his case and oriented it around these kind of kitchen table issues, but also referenced Donald Trump. So kind of setting it up that way. He said, with costs shooting up, we are all getting less, even if you're making more. And Donald Trump's chaos and cruelty mean that the Wisconsin that we cherish will perish unless we unite and fight back. So what do you make? We have obviously known for many weeks that this was mm-hmm. coming. He said that he was getting everything in order to launch a bid like the day after that Evers said that he would not run for re-election. So what did you make of the campaign launch and kind of how it began?
Talking to people this week, David Crowley's reputation is a very charming politician who's done a great job of working with a Republican-controlled legislature to get a financial lifeline from Milwaukee County. They've had a pension problem for two decades, trying to get their way out of that. He got them to approve Republicans to sign off on this idea of an increased sales tax to help pay off their costs. Really works well in the Capitol, knows his stuff. People feel like that really came through, like that kind of sense of charm. Interesting story, but videos, launch videos, if they go viral, it helps you raise money. That's the big thing. I didn't get the sense it's going to go viral, this one. And that's going to be an issue because it's going to be a slog to raise money in this campaign because you've got so many people. Now, officially, we have two elected officials in the Democratic primary, Crowley and Sarah Rodriguez, lieutenant governor. Unofficially, Kel DeRoys is probably going to get in before too long. Francesca Hong, both state lawmakers from Madison. Missy Hughes, head of the Wisconsin Development Corporation, she's looking at a bid. We're all waiting on Josh Call, the Attorney General. Mandela Barnes, I mean, this is going to be a crowded field. You have to figure out how to raise money. So a couple things about this entire dynamic. One, there'll be a fundraiser report due in January. That will probably separate the wheat from the chaff, they say in politics, because if you can't raise money, it'll be apparent by January when the report comes out. Two, Crowley is from the Milwaukee lane. We talk about lanes all the time. He's got the lane to himself right now. But if Call doesn't get in and then Barnes does, there's competition for the Milwaukee lane. So that might be an issue for Crowley. Oh, by the way, Milwaukee is both a benefit and a hindrance for Crowley. Little fact for everybody at home. There has never been a Democrat from Milwaukee elected governor of Wisconsin. There's one Democrat who served as governor, Martin Schreiber. But he became governor because his predecessor left to go join the Carter administration. So Milwaukee is a hindrance. Now, Scott Walker was county executive. He ran on a platform to become governor. Definitely, he's a Republican from the suburbs. And he could run kind of like, I'm a reformer of Milwaukee, whereas David Moore owns Milwaukee. And let's be honest, outstate folks sometimes think Milwaukee is, you know, a high crime, not great place, except for the Brewers, of course. So there are all these pluses and minuses for him, and so we got to wait for a second. What's Call going to do? He's taking his time. How are these lanes filled up? You know, where all these folks fit in, and can they raise money because money is a lifeblood of politics.
You know, I asked Crowley that same question about Milwaukee. The way that Milwaukee gets discussed in the Capitol, much like Madison, is that it's kind of a not really Wisconsin, right? Sometimes people kind of levy that. And he made the argument that his relationship to a county that has many different towns and cities in it and has it's obviously an economic and sort of population boom are an asset. The other thing that he mentioned, I asked him what was sort of in the cons column of launching this bid, and he said, well, let's name the elephant in the room. I am a black man from Milwaukee, and so he would be the first black governor of Wisconsin. A number of the other people that you mentioned would also be first woman, first Asian American. And so that is something that he will have to be sort of selling himself as a governor for all. There has been, I think, a received wisdom sometimes that only a white man can be the governor of Wisconsin. That's so far been the case. And so that's, I think, also going to be a dynamic in this race. So that'll be interesting.
We have an example of a black candidate statewide in 2022, Mandela Barnes, who's also looking at running for governor, right? Mandela ran behind Tony Evers, who's running for re-election, even in Democratic areas. Okay, is that because of the crime thing? Remember, Ron Johnson went out of his way to define Barnes as soft on crime. Was that it? Was race a factor? We can't really separate those two issues, but there's a reason why Barnes ran behind Evers. What is it? Incumbency, because you know both Evers and Johnson are incumbents, but there is a discussion about race going on. And when I talk to folks about the dynamic of this primary and how it might affect it, how it might play in the general election as well.
Yeah, so that'll be really interesting to kind of pay attention to. Moving on, but related to Crowley, this kind of ongoing rift in the Democratic Party with Representative Sylvia Ortiz-Velez. She testified on behalf of a bill this week about executive power, and she named David Crowley in this testimony. She basically said the reason for this dispute that she's been having with the Democratic Party came from them trying to silence her testimony on this. And so this was about executive power during the COVID-19 pandemic. And so speaking to a committee this week, she testified, knowing what I know and have experienced during this time period and since, I cannot in good conscience ignore what happened in Milwaukee County, nor ignore what County Executive David Crowley did. It is my duty to tell you and the public, we need to pass this bill to make sure this doesn't happen again. She's referring to a requirement for county staffers to have proof of the COVID-19 vaccination. In response, a spokesperson for Crowley sent my colleague Rich Kramer this statement. The Milwaukee County Office of Corporation Counsel is confident that the executive orders issued by the county executive during the COVID-19 public health emergency were legal and pursuant to his lawful authority. We strongly disagree with the representative's claims and oppose her legislation on this matter. So this has been this ongoing kind of dispute. She is the only currently Democrat signed onto this Republican-led bill, but this has just been the sort of continuing tale of this dispute.
Well, we talk about how administrative rules aren't very sexy to people at home. So these beefs that she has with Crowley aren't necessarily sexy. One of them is, so besides the you must show me your COVID-19 vaccination status by October 1st of 2021 thing, she's complaining because his executive orders were going to one committee that she was on, then went to a different committee. Again, not very sexy at home. What I was watching more was, are we going to see a big rift here between her and Democrats? Because she said to me, during the whole I was barred from the Capitol thing, they're barring me from the Capitol trying to prevent me from testifying about this bill because it's going to hurt Crowley's campaign for governor. I don't get the impression from my call so far this has made a dent in that or people are paying attention to it, but there's always this tension. There are a lot of reporters in the room for a hearing that normally would not get a lot of attention because what's going to happen next? We're still waiting for the police report from the threat that she allegedly made that was reported by so many Democrats. We got that statement late Friday of last week that from the entire Dem leadership team in the assembly of she threatened to shoot three of our members. We had to take that seriously. So those users out there, she told me on Friday, I use hyperbole, but I never threatened anybody. If they took it that way, I apologize, but that's not what I intended at all.
The other kind of component of this dispute that we saw play out this week was over the Hispanic Heritage Month resolution. And so she had not been part of the Hispanic Caucus's authored resolution. That was, again, part of this conflict that she had with fellow Democrats. She then authored her own version, and that's the version that got taken up on the floor on Thursday. Again, I think we thought there might be a little bit more kind of public dispute over this. What ended up happening was there was 15 minutes of debate on the resolutions. Democratic members of the Hispanic caucus got cut off during that debate. She rose, she spoke about it. It passed relatively little kind of maybe there was underlying tensions, but not necessarily fireworks on the floor that maybe we thought might come.
And if you're watching home going, God, this stuff sounds kind of petty, guess what? It's politics. It's all petty sometimes. You know, these are perceived slights, or real or not, but these are kind of drive these as divisions sometimes. It's not just policy, it's personality that gets at this stuff and underscores some challenges in the caucus.
Yeah, and I think sometimes people do, watching at home, get a little bit cynical, but then people also, our lawmakers are up to actual lawmaking business, and so we had an assembly session yesterday. A number of bills were passed, three that are sort of most significant, I think. One that would require state workers to be in person 80% of the time, one that would bar most kinds of flags, including pride flags, from state buildings, and one that would bar undocumented people from using Medicaid. We have a little bit of video about that Medicaid bill that we will watch right now.
This bill is all about politics. It's about creating a story where none exists. The authors of this bill even acknowledge this, because in the memo they sent out, all they talked about was other states, not ours. Why? Because we don't provide health care to undocumented immigrants. Here's the truth. If you don't have affordable health care, they don't want you to hold them accountable. Instead, they want you to blame someone else. Those others, those undocumented people, who must be getting something at your expense. But they are not.
If you're not here legally, it's really that simple. You don't get the benefits of those who are here legally by taking their tax dollars out of the pockets of hard-working Wisconsinites. The more you expand welfare, especially in the healthcare sector, all you're doing is continuing to push those costs onto the backs of the private sector, the hardworking middle class that's struggling to have some kind of insurance.
And so notably, of course, none of those bills that I just mentioned, if they do pass the Senate, are going to get signed by Governor Evers. He has said that he doesn't believe in requiring this back-to-work thing for state workers. He says that that discriminates against state workers who, pardon me, don't live near Madison or Milwaukee. He himself has raised a pride flag over the Capitol every single year that he's been in office. And then to the discussion that we just saw, undocumented people cannot get Badger care. So that's sort of not already, that's already not a thing.
If the Senate's going to pass, it's still a big question. The Senate has not come in yet this fall. There are days in October, November set aside to come in. We've seen no sign they're really getting to work on anything for the fall just yet, but we're waiting to see what they're going to do.
Yeah, so, and again, you know, we're going into a big election cycle, and so we do see a lot of legislation kind of perhaps
this
aimed
is my surprise
at
face.
Rallying people. An election in Wisconsin? Who knew? Relatedly, we also saw dueling education packages introduced this week, Republicans first and then Democrats. So the Republican bills include a teacher's bill of rights that would standardize discipline for students who are sent away for disruptive behavior, a math skill screener similar to the reading skill booster that was passed 2 years ago, I believe, district consolidations, credits sharing for dual enrollment during high school, and then this federal school choice tax credit that has to do with the One Big Beautiful Bill Act that we'll talk about in a moment. On the Democratic side of things, they proposed funding general school aides increase, a voucher school transparency that would require that the cost of voucher schools be listed on year-end tax bills, and then healthy school meals, which they've been promoting for quite a long time, free breakfast and lunches for anybody, any student who opts into that. And we have a little bit of video again from the launch of the of two kind of significant priorities, pardon me, from both parties.
Recently, the federal government created the National School Choice Tax Credit, which allows donors to receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit on any donations that they make to nonprofits that provide student scholarships. This program isn't about one educational school. Instead, it helps public, private, charter, and even homeschool families access the tools they need to help their kids succeed.
The bill we're proposing today is very simple. It provides basic funding for general school aides to Wisconsin schools to fund the $325 increase revenue limit authority from the 2023 budget, plus a little for inflation, so that districts do not have to increase property taxes. This bill is really just a test. It's a test of whether Republican politicians are serious about holding the line on property taxes, in which case they'll sign on to this bill and pass it, or if they're going to continue hoarding your money in state coffers and refusing to fund your community schools.
So again, both sort of both sides signaling their policy priorities. That national school choice tax credit, Evers has said he essentially won't sign on to. Wisconsin already has one of the most robust voucher school systems in the country. And then what do you make of the Democratic plan to try to increase aid by that size?
Well, so they want, it's more than $1.1 billion. Right now, our project, you have a surplus of $770-some million. There's an issue there. Look, most of these things aren't going anywhere. Go through the Republican priority list, standardizing discipline across every district. Evers is a former state school superintendent. He's not going to go for that. The opting Wisconsin in, he's already said he's not going to go for that. The one thing I'm kind of watching for, though, is the math piece of this puzzle, because we did do a reading bill that was similar. There was actually some agreement there. Is room for compromise there? What I'm watching for is once these bills are introduced, because we just got an outline, there was actually no introduction of the bill. Once introduced, do we get Democratic co-sponsors on that math bill? That might give you a sign that's got some legs to go somewhere. And where's the governor at it? Because let's face it, Wisconsin has struggled, like many places, post-COVID. We are still behind where we were testing before. People are arguing to catch up. Is this a way to catch us up? We'll see.
We'll see. And so that takes us to the stock picks for this week. Rising, we have, speaking of, property taxes.
So property tax levies. So Wisconsin Policy Forum does this tool. It summarizes all these kind of great numbers about what's happening in local governments. Levies raised in 2024 by the second biggest increase since 2006 or 9, I think it is, probably driven by schools. So all the referendum are driving schools to raise the levies going above the limits. That means more money. Also worth noting that property values are rising faster than levies, which means your property tax rate is not as high or lower. Still pay more because your value is going up, but still interesting mix of numbers if you're a homeowner and like property taxes or facts about those.
And we are kind of in back-to-school mode, so we have some numbers from the University of Wisconsin and their enrollment numbers.
So first look at what might be happening, I stress might, with international student enrollment in Wisconsin because of what's happening nationally. So enrollment overall in the system, flat, like down 96 students. So what UW does is there's an early count in September. They figure, okay, we have this many kids, we think. Then they do a much more detailed one later on, do an actual, this is how many kids we have. This is the first look. And looking across the system, again, flat. And they're saying it's likely due to international students being down. Now, we don't have numbers for international students just yet. Looking back previously, there were more than 10,000 kids, international kids in the system a year ago. Most of those are at Madison, like around 7,000 and change. What's happened, the Trump administration has gone through all these things saying, we're not going to let you in for this, this, or this. We're going to reject visas for this. So this could be a sign of that happening. Worth noting, though, that some camps are doing great. Whitewater, I think, had a big boost in enrollment. So it's very uneven. The ones who are Milwaukee and Madison are the most international kids, the biggest kind of more high profile. They're both kind of down a little bit, which is unusual for them.
And so you have ranked Assembly Democrats as falling. We've been talking about this dispute for, I think, weeks now.
So let's talk about the politics of it. So separate the district to the politics. Okay, the politics are this. If Democrats win the majority next year at 50 seats with Sylvia Ortiz, they've got, Les, they have an issue. That is, how can they govern? She declared herself to me last week a minority party of one. So she said, I am a minority leader. So in the Capitol, you have heads of the majority party and a minority party. She says she's a new head of a minority party in the Assembly, a caucus of one. I'm not sure it's allowed in the rules, but that's what she's exploring. That goes to show you this divide. Now, my question is, one, can they get to 50? They got to run the table pretty much in every competitive seat to the 50. It's not an easy shot for Democrats in the Assembly. Two, will they try and primary a Sylvia next year? So I went back and looked, numbers dork that I am. In 2020, when Sylvia won her primary, she had the lowest turnout primary in the entire state in the Assembly. There were fewer than 2,000 votes cast. Nothing else was close. So she got like 900 votes, roughly, I think, in that primary. So in theory, if you have a concerted effort to go after her, you could probably beat her. But she also knows which doors to knock, who to work. And knocking out somebody because they don't get along with their colleagues or because they break ranks sometimes, it can be a hard argument to make. So I'm really kind of fascinated by who would emerge to challenge her. What will Democrats do? You won't see the ADCC, the Assembly Democratic Campaign Committee, get involved most likely. But these Democratic groups, they might get involved. Like Ryan Clancy, he had a primary last year because he's difficult to work with sometimes. And you saw some liberal groups that gave money to his opponent. What we see next fall with this seat, and again, such a low turnout district, if you are organized, it can really be a threat to you as an incumbent. You've got to work your butt off to keep your seat. Something to watch.
Something to watch for sure. Well, that will do it for Rewind for this week. I am Anya Van Wagtendonk.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.